More cheese, please. The growing demand for cheese made in Maine. Some are stinky and some briny. They can be funky or ashy. There's veiny blue cheeses, creamy brie, and crumbly feta. They're made from goat's or cow's or sheep's milk, and all are made right here in Maine. Most of the cheese made in Maine comes from small-scale local farms. Just a decade ago, there were about a dozen cheesemakers here. The Maine Cheese Guild now lists 87 licensed cheesemakers in the state, and that number is growing. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today, three cheesemakers join me to explain just what it is about the air, the land, or the grass here that imparts such special flavors to Maine cheeses. We'll also hear how the cheesemaking community is helping to promote the state's brand. Are you a cheese connoisseur? Do you have a favorite Maine-made cheese? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling. Go to any farmer's market in Maine, and you'll see people selling local cheeses of all kinds. And you'll also see people enthusiastically buying these cheeses. Today, we'll learn more about the world of cheesemaking in Maine. In the studio with me, Jessie Dowling. She's the owner of Fuzzy Udder Farm and president of the Maine Cheese Guild. Heather Donahue is co-owner of Balfour Farm Organic Dairy and Farmstead Creamery, and she's secretary of the Maine Cheese Guild. And Eric Rector is owner and cheesemaker at Monroe Cheese Studio. He's also on the board of the Maine Cheese Guild and the former president as well. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have a favorite kind of cheese or a favorite Maine-made cheese? Have you ever made cheese yourself or wondered how it's made? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Now, Heather, I just mentioned farmers markets. I understand you just came over from Portland's farmers market with your selling your cheese, right?
I did, yeah. We're down there every Wednesday from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And how's it going today?
Well, it's a beautiful sunny day, so there's lots of people out and about and enjoying some cheese.
That's great. I've actually bought your cheese at the farmers market myself. So can you just tell me how it is you got into cheese making?
My journey to being a cheesemaker actually started when we had one cow, and a friend of mine bought me a home cheesemaking book. And from there, we just kind of played around making yogurt. And when we moved here to Maine, we made a conscious decision to start making cheese and have a cheese-based business on our farm.
And now, what is it that you specialize in?
So we make a variety of raw milk aged cheeses. We make some cheddars flavored with spices, and we also do gouda, feta, some yogurts, and soft cheeses.
Great. I want to hear more about that, but I want to hear Eric's story as well. As was there some reason that you started cheese making?
Well, I got some cows, and my first cow had her first calf, and I had gotten the cows to mow my pasture. That was really the goal of having cows. I've been homesteading in Maine since 1990, and my wife and I have a big garden. We have an orchard, and I just hated mowing the field, so I thought I'd get something more productive and less polluting to get the grass mowed every year. And we had a big barn, so we were able to get a couple of cows and put them out on the pasture, and that worked really well. And then she had her first calf, and I started hand milking her just to find out what that was about. And in preparation, I bought all the cheesemaking supplies, knowing we'd have more milk than we would ever need to drink. Having never made cheese before, but always loved cheese, just sort of threw myself into it and loved making cheese. Wasn't so great of a dairyman. I like to say my cow fired me after about 4 weeks of milking because I was doing it so poorly. But I really got hooked on making cheese and began picking up cheese from a local organic dairy and have been making ever since. Got licensed in 2006 and still doing it today.
And what kind of cheeses are you making?
I make yogurt as well as raw milk aged cheeses and sell those locally in the Belfast area.
So you still have cows?
In a sense, we actually just moved to a new house up the hill from the old farmhouse and have new farmers in that farmhouse, and they actually have continued on the cattle in the barn and are continuing to graze them.
Oh, that's nice. Collaborative
yes.
process.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Mm-hmm. So, Jesse, your turn to tell us how you came about doing this.
Sure. It's kind of roundabout. I got interested in environmental and social justice issues in college, and I realized that farming was a direct way that I could make a difference in making the world a better place. And so I worked on some vegetable farms, realized my knees were not cut out for weeding 8 hours, 12 hours a day. So I started looking at apprenticeships. I found MOFCA's apprenticeship program, really easy to find one. And I ended up working at Caitlin Hunter's farm, Appleton Creamery, and also Ells Farm Sheep Dairy. So I learned about goats and sheep in 2007, and I fell in love with it. I worked with Caitlin Hunter until 2011. And 2012, I ended up starting my own creamery. I milk sheep and goats. Right now we're milking 51 sheep and goats. Oh. And I also buy in organic cow's milk. Right now I'm buying organic cow's milk from Grace Pond Farm, which is in conjunction with the Milk House in Monmouth. And we make a variety of fresh and aged soft ripened cheeses from all three milks. And we do try to do a little bit of everything. And we also make sheep milk yogurt.
It's nice to hear all of you, you know, are getting your dairy either yourselves or locally. And so there's a real community here of cheesemakers. And Jesse, you're actually president of the Maine Cheese Guild. So can you tell us about what the Maine Cheese Guild does to bring people together?
Yes, I'd be happy to. We spend a lot of time working on raising up the educational level of our cheesemakers and in the cheesemaking community. So we offer workshops from presenters and teachers from all over the world. We just had Yvonne Larcher come from France to come and give two-day workshops. But we've had people come from the West Coast, from Vermont, from all over England, everywhere. And we feel that it's really important to teach our cheesemakers how to make different cheeses. We spend a lot of time on food safety, how to write food safety plans. We work a lot with folks from UMaine Orono and a cooperative extension to give us the best practices with making safe cheese. We also keep track of policy going on in Augusta on the state level, and we also follow things on the federal level. And then the third arm of the guild is really marketing and how to brand Maine cheese. We have a eatmainecheese.org website, and we're really trying to push eating Maine cheese and explaining to people the importance of why it's so important to eat Maine cheese and how many options there are.
Well, that's something we wanted to talk about today, is what is it about Maine cheese? Is there something different here that makes the cheese different? And how does that relate to branding it? Is there something in the air?
Well, I think cheese is different everywhere you go. When you are enjoying a cheese from a specific place, you're enjoying a part of that place because there are always local microbes and local pasture conditions and different flora and fauna that the animals are grazing on everywhere. So really, every cheese is different, and that goes for Maine as well. We have a unique climate, a unique set of pasture grasses and things, and it just creates a Maine cheese as opposed to a Wisconsin cheese or a North Carolina cheese or French.
So would you be able to taste a Maine cheese and say, that's a Maine cheese? Maybe?
Yes and no. If I knew the cheese, I would probably be familiar with it enough to pick it out. But, there's every farm has its different management practices. So one person's pasture might be a lot of clover, and the other person's pasture might be a lot of timothy and orchard grass. And so even next door, you can have different cheeses. There's a famous example in Britain of two cheddar makers, and they're literally across the street from each other, but they make very different cheeses.
Oh, that's interesting.
There is one thing about Maine cheese that does differentiate it from other states is that a lot of our producers are very small producers and coming from very small herds. A lot of the organic dairy herds are 50 cows, 10 cows, very small. And I think that really translates into the quality of the milk and in the care, the handcraftedness of the cheese itself. Everything is very by hand on so many levels here.
So these all count as artisanal cheese when you say that term?
Definitely.
Okay.
So. And many farmstead.
Okay. And Heather, you also wanted to comment on the specialness, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say an example of what Eric was talking about the difference in types of cheeses that people can make. One thing that the Cheese Guild does is every December we have a holiday party. And about September or so, we pick a recipe and everybody gets that recipe. It's put out there and people can make that recipe. And, you know, everyone has different kinds of milk that they're using, goat, sheep, cow milk. At one point, we had a buffalo cheese company here in Maine. But anyway, so everybody uses the same recipe, but because you have different milk and it's coming from different areas, again, what Eric was talking about with the environment of the different farms, those cheeses are all very different, even though you're using the same make process. And we sit down and we taste all those cheeses, and you can really taste the difference in who may have pasteurized the milk, who has raw milk, the aging conditions. Is it hand cut? Is it hand stirred? Is it stirred with a machine? You know, all those things and different nuances really make Maine cheeses special. So my cheddar is different from another cheddar, different from another cheddar. And that makes everything very individual. And I think that's what makes Maine so special, is we don't have a standard of identity for Maine cheese. They're all very, very unique cheeses.
And is that the reason, I understand, demand is growing for Maine-made cheeses? Do you have numbers on that, Jesse? Or?
Oh, I wish I did.
but the number of cheesemakers even has grown.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone from, you know, there were 16 licensed cheesemakers when the Cheese Guild formed in 2003, and now there's over 87 with, you know, a dozen, maybe two dozen in the pipeline.
Well, based on the average amount of cheese that the average American eats per year, Maine is still only making less than 3% of the amount of cheese that is consumed in the state of Maine. So we have a lot of room to grow, but there's definitely, you know, then demand for, you know, the small artisanal version of Maine cheeses.
Right. And where is it being sold?
All over.
Everywhere. I mean, you can find Maine cheese in co-ops, mm-hmm. at farmers markets, where a lot of times when you're at a farmer's market, you're actually talking to the cheesemaker or the apprentice that made the cheese. And so you're able to really communicate to the person that is directly involved in either caring for the animals or making the cheese or aging the cheese. So co-ops, independent grocery stores, larger grocery stores.
Restaurants.
Restaurants. A lot of restaurants are really interested in putting local cheese on their cheese plates, on top of their pizzas, you know, local yogurt, even going on to the yogurt parfaits for breakfasts and brunch and things like that. So people are really getting really creative about using that. And it's really kind of a trademark for restaurants to be able to say that they're using Maine cheese now. And so that's kind of the driving force in creating some demand as well.
Yeah, the whole local, they'll name which farm they got it
absolutely.
From right on the menu.
Yeah, very popular idea right now is to be able to list the farms that are providing the foods on the menus.
What about nationally or even internationally? Is it reaching out that far?
It's starting to. A lot of cheesemakers have been scaling up in Maine to get the right equipment that they can sell their cheese over state lines. There's a handful of cheesemakers that are kind of starting to look at markets that are further afield. And I think that over the next few years, you're going to see Maine cheese on the plates of fancy restaurants in some of the bigger cities in the country and at some of the fancy cheese shops all over, which is really exciting. It's really a growth that we need to see. I wanted to just quickly mention one of the reasons why it's really important to buy Maine-made dairy products, milk and cheese, is because dairy farmers, not just in Maine, but nationally, but very much so in Maine, are having a really hard time with the milk prices and the loss of the contracts, especially six of our organic producers lost their contract with Horizon and are having a really hard time moving that fluid milk into other products. So buying Maine dairy products right now is actually a really important thing to save a lot of local agriculture.
Okay. And we sort of, you know, touched upon the whole process of cheese making. Does anyone here want to take a shot at kind of trying to explain in a nutshell how you make cheese?
Well, it's actually so simple that it's like infinitely complex. And that's not kidding. I mean, it's milk, salt, cultures, and enzymes. And then from there, you get the explosion of all the different varieties you would see anywhere in the world. And really, time is probably the most important element in making cheese, because a young cheese is very different from an old cheese, even if it's the exact same cheese batch. Over the time of aging, you know, 10 weeks or even 10 months, you can create completely different cheeses. And then you can move them into different environments where they're either, you know, high moisture or low moisture, and you get different rinds that affect the flavor profile and the ultimate cheese that you end up eating. So it's a simple set of ingredients that turns into an infinite number of varieties.
So you change any one of those factors and you create a different kind of cheese.
Even
these
slightly.
These are standardized, though? Like if someone says this is a Gouda or Howda, I'm told I should say. Howda, right? The official way to say it. If, you know, you have that, does that mean that it's made the exact same way?
Howda's actually a place. It's not literally a cheese, but it's the cheese that comes from Howda.
Uh-huh.
Just like Camembert is a place.
Right.
But then you eat the cheese that comes from Camembert, and they have specialized in that Bloemy Rhine style for different reasons. So a lot of these cheese names are actually names of places. Parmesan is the cheese of Parma. So in a sense, you know, any cheese that comes from Parma is Parmesan. But then, you know, the animals that are typical of that region and the conditions they have end up pointing toward a specific style of cheese.
Okay. So in that process, the safety issues, what concerns do you have to watch out for, I guess, to be licensed, right, that you have to meet certain requirements?
Cleanliness is probably the biggest thing that we worry about as far as, you know, even starting in the barn. You know, if you don't start cheese making with clean milk, then you're not going to have clean cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And so really animal husbandry is where everything starts, and that goes back to having good pastures and good health for your animals, as well as keeping them clean, keeping your milking equipment clean. And that's always been our approach, is to try and keep everything as clean as possible. And then carry that right through to the cheese room. Keep everything as clean as possible. Minimize things that don't need to be in the cheese room. And obviously you have like footwear and sanitation and all those things that kind of go along with that. But yeah, definitely just clean is the number one rule when you're dealing with cheese making.
And there are folks who come through and check?
Yes.
Okay.
There are three or four dairy inspectors in the state right now, and they have different regions, and they come, and they're actually really helpful. For our $25 a year license, we get periodical milk and product testings for all of our facilities, plus water tests. So it's a really good deal for us as cheesemakers, because we need to get that feedback. We need to know if there's a cleaning problem. A lot of times, if you do get a high count, there's somewhere in your cleaning system, whether it's your pipeline or your milking equipment, where you haven't cleaned it right, but you can't see that. So you need that lab test to tell you, and that's the role that the state is playing, and it's very helpful.
Okay, so much to learn from you guys, but we're going to take a quick break. So when we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Folia in Portland's Old Port, where you'll find jewelry by Maine designers as well as custom design and repair services, foliajewelry.com, and McVetti's Hearth and Home, offering patio furniture, grills, and wood swing sets for family-friendly spaces. More at stovesofmaine.com.
President Trump is threatening to impose tariffs on almost every Chinese product that comes into the U.S.
I always say we have rebuilt China. They've taken so much. It's time, folks. It's time. So we're going to get smart.
I'm Audie Cornish. The impact a trade war could have on American manufacturers, companies, and consumers. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30. Here on Maine Public Radio.
Remember that day when you just couldn't seem to get going? Then you turned on Maine Public Classical. Okay, you said, it's happening. I can do this. Well, we're here for you 24/7, 365 days a year. The best music from across the centuries will uplift and inspire you. Maine Public Classical, you won't want to miss what's coming next.
More information about Maine Public Classical is at mainepublic.org. Just click on radio.
That's it, cheese. We'll go somewhere where there's cheese.
Welcome back. That was Wallace and Gromit. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today on the program, cheese, glorious cheese. Joining me are three cheesemakers with the Maine Cheese Guild. Heather Donahue is co-owner of Balfour Farm. Eric Rector is owner of Monroe Cheese Studios, and Jesse Dowling, owner of Fuzzy Udder Farm. Fun name. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And we have an email from Jennifer I just wanted to read. She's with the Midcoast Cheese Trail. She says, 7 Midcoast area cheesemakers have come together under the leadership of Caitlin Hunter of Appleton Creamery, a founder of the Maine Cheese Guild, to form the Midcoast Cheese Trail through an interactive website and downloadable map. Area wineries are also featured. Well worth a look. So check out midcoastcheesetrail.com. And Jennifer, I hope you can put that on our Maine Calling Facebook page. We're going to go to Lena in Surrey. She's got a question for our guests. Lena, hi.
Hi. I grew up in a Polish enclave in Saco, and this was back in the 60s, and I was a little girl, and my grandmother, among several other Polish people, had goats and made a cheese from their milk that I would not compare it to today's goat cheese. It was a very wet cheese, and they put raisins in it for some reason, because it was absolutely delicious, and my sister and I would devour, you know, this cheese that our grandmother made, but we'd pick out the raisins. I've never heard or seen of anything since then, since the old people died off. I wondered if any of your cheese people have heard of such a cheese. Thank you.
Anybody heard of that, raisins?
I wouldn't know what specific name that would be in Polish, but it sounds very familiar to a basic farmer's cheese, which is a quick cheese, which would be typically made, you know, very commonly and mixed with herbs or fruit or other things. And it's common in many different cultures, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's what it was.
So the cheese is like a vehicle for the other foods.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Thanks for calling, Lena. We also have calling us now David Stone. He's the founder of Forager, and he's going to tell us a little bit about that. Thank you for calling in, David.
Sure. Hello, Heather and Eric and Jesse.
So can you explain a little bit about what Forager does and what it has to do with cheesemaking?
Sure, Cindy. So Forager is a social mission company funded in part by the state of Maine, and our mission is to make locally sourced food more widely available to everybody. And local food is actually the fastest growing segment of the food market, driven by consumer demand to eat healthier, fresher, more local. In fact, local food is now the number one product that consumers look for in the grocery store, 93% actually. And the market's poised to reach $18 billion this year. But even with that, local food only accounts for 3% of what we consume today, although Maine is twice the national average because of great cheese producers and farmers like your guests on the panel. So why is it such a small amount of what we consume? Well, you know, unlike working with a large distributor, if you're a grocer or wholesaler where everything is basically on one catalog or online, you know, a grocer or wholesaler has to work with 20, 30, 40 individual suppliers. And every one of those orders or processes is by email, text, fax, phone. You know, and then there's stacks of paper invoices and paper checks. It's just really inefficient, and it can't really scale. So Forager steps in and puts all of the local producers on a single e-commerce platform, or basically like an Amazon for wholesale food, which makes it really easy for a grocer or cheese buyer with just a few clicks to purchase, you know, varieties of cheese or varieties of produce, and then streamlines the entire process. It actually costs grocers up to 30% more to source locally than it does to buy conventional food because of all of the challenges around the local food economy. So we actually have several cheesemakers now on our platform. We have about 10. We have great cheese plate makers like Flying Goat Farm who actually has Nubian goats, Swallowtail Farm in North Whitfield, Sunset Acres in Brookfield, and several more. And we're seeing just great numbers of orders and increasing purchases, and, you know, it's really terrific.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for explaining how that all works, David. David Stone, he's the founder of Forager. He focuses on the local food economy. And I just wanted to ask you, the guests here today, about the local sources, the local cows and goats. Is that pretty much a big element of what you're doing?
Definitely. I mean, we would be nowhere as cheesemakers without excellent sources of milk, and we're really lucky here in Maine that small dairies are still economically viable. And, you know, even down to 12 cows, which is the size of the dairy where I now get my milk. And, you know, it also allows a person who's interested in also doing milk production as well as cheese production to do so on a small scale but be economically viable, especially in terms of getting that important licensing and feedback and the help from cooperative extension. We're really lucky here in Maine, but I think that's reflected in the fact of how many people are making cheese here commercially.
And how much does it influence the cheese as far as what kind of cow or what kind of goat you're getting it from?
It makes a huge difference, especially in terms of butterfat. Making cheese from Holstein milk versus Jersey milk is the quintessential thing I think of. You've got 5.4% butterfat on a lot of these Jersey cows, and the Holsteins just don't have the same yield. So you're going to have a very different product, very different flavor. You get this bright yellow, kind of orangey color from the Jersey milk. People always say, why is your mozzarella yellow? Is that butter? And, you know, it's actually just the natural beta carotene from them eating grass.
So then from Holsteins, what would a typical cheese be that you would use them for?
Oh, you can make,
cheddar,
you can make thousands
cheddar, yeah.
of cheeses uh-huh. from them. Cheddar, but there's lots of good applications of Holstein milk. I don't mean to diss the Holstein milk.
Oh, no.
I just personally love the Jersey cow milk.
Heather actually has a really interesting herd.
Well, we have Normandy cattle, which mm-hmm. is kind of, they milk a little bit like a Jersey in that they have that higher butter fat, and we get the yellowing of the milk in the summertime when they're on grass. But they also have high protein, and the Normandies are prized for cheesemaking in France as well as beef. And so that also gives us another revenue stream for the farm when we have cows that are not in the milking lineup anymore. They kind of have a retirement plan and come to farmers market in beef. But I think definitely having different animals and, you know, the animals are just as specific to the cheeses that are made as the place where they're at. The cheddar that I make is very, very different from cheddar that someone might make with Holstein cow milk because it has lower butter fat. Our cows have higher butter fat, and so our cheddar tends to be softer because of that. And so people are always kind of taken aback a little bit. It doesn't have the sharpness that you expect from a cheddar because it has that butter fat in it. It's really creamy, and it melts really great, which is kind of goes for all of our cheeses because of the butterfat that's in them. But it kind of gives them a different appreciation and kind of widens the expectation of what a cheddar is. And it goes back to that idea that, you know, you can use the same recipe, but if you're using different milk, you're going to have a different cheese.
So people shouldn't be surprised if they taste something and say, I thought this was cheddar.
Right, okay. Right. It's going to have a very different flavor profile, and it's pretty unique to our farm, in part because of the cows that we use and the milk that we use.
That's interesting. We're going to go to Arlene, who's calling from Rockland. Hi, Arlene. What did you want to talk about?
Well, if people are looking to sample a lot of Maine cheese in one place, the Maine Cheese Guild has our third annual Maine Cheese Festival coming up on Sunday, September 9th at Wolfneck Farm in Freeport.
Oh, so what will people see and find there?
We are bringing together 30 Maine cheesemakers to sample and sell their cheeses. And it's a great opportunity for people to meet their cheesemakers and meet cheesemakers from all over the state and listen to music and learn about cheesemaking and pairing and other fermented foods and workshops and all sorts of things are planned throughout the day.
Great. Well, thanks for calling, Arlene. And I was going to ask also if there are such not only events, but workshops and classes for the public. Are there ways for people to learn more?
There is definitely at the festival. There'll be quite a few cheesemaking oriented and pairing workshops. We've gotten a lot of requests from the public about beginning cheesemaking workshops, and we don't have many through the guild that are planned, but a lot of cheesemakers themselves are putting on beginner workshops. Appleton Creamery, Imagine Dairy Farm do beginner workshops in the winter. I think there's a few done through adult education,
and then the cooperative extension had some sponsored workshops mm-hmm. too. And one great way to learn about your Maine cheesemakers is to attend a guild meeting or become a member of the guild, because when we have our meetings on a almost monthly basis, we have about 10 meetings a year, it's always at a different cheesemaker's place. Balfour Farm just hosted the June meeting 2 weeks ago. or last week. It's been a long week.
Last week.
We started hanging. It's been a long week. but yeah, so we just hosted, and we had a group of about 10 cheesemakers, but it's open to the public. And the typical flow of the day is that we get a tour of the facility. We get to talk about the types of cheeses that are made. Usually there's a time that we kind of eat cheese and snacks and talk about what's going on with everybody and get to visit and stuff. And you really get a chance to interact and talk with a lot of different people all at the same time. And then we have our business meeting where we, you know, conduct the business of the guild and being an organization, you know, there's certain things that we need to do. We have the American Cheese Society conference is coming up, and we're sending, is it six?
Yes.
We're going to have six attendees. Well, five plus one. So we'll be six all together. Cheesemakers from Maine will be attending in
End of July.
It's not. I keep Pittsburgh. Wanting to say it's Philadelphia. It's Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So we're going to Pittsburgh, and it's 3-4 days of workshops, tours, educational time, and then we eat a lot of cheese.
Yep.
It's like breakfast, lunch, and
huge.
Dinner. It's breakfast, lunch, and dinner of cheese the whole time we're there. But we then everybody that goes writes an article for our newsletter, and that's another way we can educate and bring that information back to our other members. And so that's really important, too, for reaching out to our own members.
It's interesting to me how collegial the cheesemaking community is. I mean, are you not competitive with one another? You're kind of aiming for the same market.
It is, but I think it's more of a cooperative competition. You know, I mean, you're competing for that same dollar at the farmer's market or on the cheese shelf for somebody doing their grocery shopping. But at the same time, Maine's a small state. We all know each other, and there's a lot of times where we have issues or problems or questions, and we can go to each other and help each other. And so that's really important to maintain that type of relationship within our organization.
Yeah, and Heather mentioned before, you know, when we take the same recipe and we take it back to our farm and we make the same type of cheese, it's not the same cheese. And so a good cheese plate has no less than three cheeses and could have up to six. More the better. I don't think could have enough cheese. There's a cheese for every occasion.
Okay, we'll go to a question from Katie in Brunswick. Hi, Katie, you're on Maine Calling.
It's not the same cheese.
Oops. Katie, can you hear me? Did you have a question? I think she might not be listening through the phone, so we'll go to John calling from Portland. Hi, John. Did you have a question?
I don't have a question as much as I'd just like to add a little bit to the conversation. I'm from Rosemont Market and been doing the cheese thing for a long time, and previous to that at the Portland Greengrocer. And just adding to the conversation that when I first started in the cheese world, you know, it was very dominated by European cheeses and cheeses from, you know, across the ocean. And that cheese making in this country, I feel like, has gotten so much better that, you know, we actually can put together cheese cases now that are completely American cheese cases, and actually even regional cheese cases like Vermont cheeses, Maine cheeses. And as we really try to get more local, really use farms like Balfour Farm for yogurts and cheeses, and Winter Hill Farm and Sunset Acre Farm. So we really are trying very hard to make those cheeses, which are becoming world class, available to our customers. So I just wanted to add that to your conversation.
Great, John. Thanks for calling in. We have a question from an email from Seely. It says, what is the weirdest ingredient you've ever tried to incorporate into cheese? Any weird items the raisins
weren't
that weird.
That might sound weird. It doesn't sound weird to me, but would sound weird to maybe the public is seaweed. That's an ingredient that we have readily available in Maine, and there's quite a few Maine cheesemakers that are using dulse and nori and different types of Maine seaweeds that, you know, this is a local product that it really distinguishes us from pretty much everywhere else, because we have awesome seaweed and we have awesome cheese. So you can find a lot of local cheeses that incorporate kind of unusual ingredients like that.
That's so Maine. Well, we need to take another quick break, but first a word about tomorrow's show. Jennifer Rooks is in Iceland, where she's going to host a show on the role of tourism in Iceland and the parallels to Maine. Email any comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com. And Ocean View at Falmouth, Maine owned and managed for 31 years and committed to offering active retirement living with peace of mind for the future.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Stephen McCauley talks about his new novel, My Ex-Life. It's a comedy about a couple whose marriage ended 30 years ago when the husband came out of the closet. They pick up their friendship as her marriage crumbles and his boyfriend has left him. Join us.
Fresh Air is tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. Coming up at 2 o'clock, it's World Affairs. Join us for a discussion about the cybersecurity landscape and how businesses and governments can effectively work together to mitigate risks. That's on World Affairs coming up in about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Cheese, glorious cheese.
Tastes mighty inviting.
Cheese, glorious cheese.
So tantalizing.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, all about cheese making in Maine. Joining me, Eric Rector. He's with Monroe Cheese Studio. Jesse Dowling is with Fuzzy Udder Farm, and Heather Donahue with Balfour Farm. Join our conversation. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-399-3566. I just wanted to find out how challenging cheese making is. I mean, are there certain things that really make it difficult?
Well, farming is one of the hardest occupations that a person could choose by a long shot. It is really, really hard to calculate the cost, especially if you're a farmstead producer, of all of the feed, all of the manual labor, all of the livestock care that it takes to produce the milk. Plus all of the work that goes into making the cheese, all the ingredients, the rennet, the packaging, the labeling, getting it to market, the gas, the vehicles, all of those things together. And then you have to come up with a price for your cheese that the market's going to buy, and it is difficult to meet your bottom line.
And can you, I mean, is this a really viable way for people to make a living? I know people listening are like, oh, I want to make cheese. Can you survive on it?
I think it is, but you have to be prepared to make an investment. And for some people, that investment has a dollar figure, and for some people, it has a time figure. You know, Jesse did, 5 years of apprenticeship before making cheese. We milked dairy cows. So our investment was on the dairy end of things first, and then we kind of dabbled as we continued to ship milk. And that's kind of how we got our foot in the door into cheese making. We milked 10 cows, and we kept shipping that milk while we were starting to make cheese. And we've slowly built our business over the years, but it's taken us 7 years to get to the point where we are now, and we milk 12 cows. And for some people, you know, traditional dairy people, they think that, you know, you're not a real dairy farmer if you only have 12 cows. You know, people call it like a boutique dairy and that type of thing. But it really, you're doing the same work, you're just doing it for fewer cows. But in some ways, it's a lot more work than just milking the cows and shipping the milk. It's definitely not what we thought it was going to be when we started doing it. And you're always learning. I think there's always a learning component. And that's part of where the guild has come in, you know, sponsoring the workshops and stuff. But I think challenges, too, now is definitely keeping up with all of the food safety requirements that the federal government is mandating, things like that. But there's the state is great about getting that information to us, and MOFCA has some informational workshops. And so there's help out there. It's just, if you're a farmer, finding the time to try and go to the workshops and get the information and then being able to implement it.
Okay. We have an email from Catherine saying, can you talk briefly about the differences in goat cheeses versus cow cheese? Are the management practices of the animals significantly different?
There are 4 teats on a cow and 2 teats on a sheep or a goat.
That's the basics.
Learn something new every day.
The actual nutritional composition of the milk is quite different, but also not that different. You know, if you're lactose intolerant, you're probably still going to have a problem with goat's milk, but everybody's intolerance is different, so it's really an individualized thing.
The fat components, are similar, but in goats, there are much higher in certain elements than in cow's milk, which is where you get the different flavors in goat's milk. And at the same time, the protein and fat ratios are slightly different. So the way you make the cheese has to be different when you're using different milks.
But I think the fats themselves are different as well, because cow's milk readily separates the cream from the milk, and goat's milk, you don't really get that separation. And so that provides an additional challenge with cow's milk cheeses when you're making your cheese and your milk is, sitting in the vat for an hour culturing, and then it's sitting in that vat for 45 minutes to an hour during the renneting. You have to make sure you incorporate all that fat back in again before you run it. Otherwise, you're not going to have as high a yield on your cheese. And you have to handle them differently, too. I think cow's milk is a little more forgiving than goat's milk is. And I'm not sure about sheep's milk.
Sheep's milk the most forgiving.
It is the most forgiving.
Yes, easiest milk to work with.
Yep. And high fat.
But that's
really
the least common, right? People don't tend to work with sheep as much.
Well, not in the U.S., but if you go to Spain and you ask for cheese, a Spanish person's going to think in their head a sheep.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay. And is there a most difficult kind of cheese to make?
Blue.
Why?
Once you make blue, you've got blue in your cheese room. And you can clean and clean and clean, but you're still going to get blue.
It also takes a lot of skill to get the veins to come out right,
yes.
The veins of blue.
Yep.
I don't
yep.
personally make blue cheese.
Okay. And the salting is very particular aging. Actually, Eric, you should be talking about blue cheese.
I like to say blue happens. and so I work with it instead of against it and just try to make the best cheese I can. And I do enjoy when it does blue up.
Embrace the blue.
Yes,
exactly.
We have an email from CL. It's great to have abundant options for purchasing cheese locally. It was not that long ago that we were talking about the legality of raw milk sales. Can anyone speak to how cheese has become more available over the years through changes in regulations made by the Maine Department of Agriculture?
Maine's actually never outlawed raw milk sales in the state, and those are sales only that can be made in the state, and you can't sell raw milk outside of the state, but the raw milk that's sold in the state is regulated, and it's tested the same way we're tested for our cheeses and the milk that goes into our cheeses. So Maine's actually a very special place for being able to access really high-quality raw milk, and I do think that's what's made the difference in promoting, the growth of cheese industry here.
So back up and explain what raw milk, how does that differ from other ways of doing it?
Raw milk is literally milk that's right out of the animal and has not been heat-treated in any way, and you can go ahead and either consume it directly as milk, as a fluid milk, or make ice cream or make cheese from it. And when you make cheese from it, the federal regulation states that a cheese made from raw milk just has to be aged over 60 days, and then it's completely legal under the federal regulations and as well as the state regulations. So working with raw milk cheese is actually a lot easier than working just as a fluid raw milk producer who can only sell within the state of Maine. But that also provides an easy retail outlet for a small herd that's just producing raw milk.
So what advantages does raw milk offer? Is it the flavor that you end up or the process?
Yeah.
You have a lot of options, whereas once it's processed, heat treated, it sort of cuts down your options in terms of what you would like to make and the types of cheeses and the way the cheese is going to go through the make process.
And the flavor profiles of the raw milk incorporates the natural bacteria and microflora and fauna of your farm, whereas when you heat treat it, you're kind of making a stable blank that will take your cultures that you've bought from the culture houses, and that makes the cheeses a little bit more similar from cheese to cheese.
Oh, okay, great. We're going to – oh, go ahead, Heather.
I was going to say, and I think we're talking about some terminology that is very common for us in cheese making. So the difference between pasteurization and heat treatment and then raw, we kind of talked a little bit about raw, and pasteurization is a legal process that's done to heat the milk. Most small producers do vat pasteurization, so it would be 145 degrees. It's held for 30 minutes. And pasteurization has a chart recorder that records the temperature of the milk and the airspace in the heating vessel. And that is true pasteurization when it's recorded by a machine and thermometers. And then heat treatment is something that's unique to the state of Maine. And I think it has a huge impact on how we've been able to have such growth in the cheese making world in Maine, because it's one of the only states that allows it. And that process is essentially the same, only the cheesemaker is physically taking the temperature of the milk with a thermometer and then recording it themselves. There's no machine involved in it. So it's the cheesemaker going through the quality process of doing that. And that's kind of the difference when you see heat treated mm-hmm. on the label in Maine. It's different than pasteurization. Same process, but different. Same result, but different process mm-hmm. as far as the equipment that's used. And then raw milk doesn't get any heat. The cheese, if you make cheese with raw milk, it's obviously being heated to get your cultures to be activated. But selling fluid raw milk hasn't gone through any processing at all. Okay. And so that's kind of, it can be confusing for consumers.
Yeah, sometimes. There's a lot to it. We're going to go to Allison calling from Waldoboro. Hi, Allison, you're on Maine Calling.
Hi, I'm Allison Lakin, the owner and cheesemaker of Lakin's Gorgeous Cheese. Hi there, and I am based on my farm, East 40 Farm in Waldoboro, and I wanted to point out or make two suggestions for people who are interested in trying more cheeses and supporting the cheesemakers. There are different ways to learn about cheese, and one of the things that I do here at the farm and other farms offer this sort of thing is to offer classes, not in cheesemaking, but in things such as how to build a cheese board, learning how to select the cheeses and how to care for the cheeses, then have a great party. I also have a class learning how to cook with cheese, because you don't have to just make mac and cheese all the time. There are lots of other delicious dishes. So seek out cheesemakers and farms that are offering other kinds of classes. The other thing I want to suggest is those cheesemakers that are selling cheese directly from their farm, if you buy from them directly at their farm, you may have access to a broader selection of the products that they're making. Some cheesemakers, including myself, make some small batch cheeses, which they only sell at the farmstead. And many of the farmers also have other products that they are making, which are only available at the farm. For example, we have pork, which we only sell to the farm.
Okay. Well, thank you, Allison, for talking about that. So it's Allison Lakin, another cheesemaker in Maine. And we have a question, an email from Jim. Can someone please speak to the production of rennet and the process of making cheese without it?
Yes, so it is the enzyme that Eric alluded to earlier. It is derived from the fourth stomach of any ruminant, which would be cow, sheep, or goat, even reindeer. And it is what coagulates the milk. It is the enzyme that turns the milk from liquid into solids, curds and whey. It's your magic ingredient. There are lots of types of rennets. There are the animal rennets that can come from veal, kids, or lambs. And then there's microbial rennets. People call these vegetable rennets and fungal rennets. Mucor mihai is used as the fungal rennet that a lot of organic cheesemakers are choosing. And there's also microbial rennets. You got to be careful with the microbial rennets because they're often genetically modified. But there's a lot of options for rennet.
And also you can coagulate cheese just with the bacterial action creating the acid or with lemon juice or vinegar when you're making a quick sort of queso fresco type of cheese.
There's also
so for vegetarians, is some of that acceptable then?
Yep. We use the vegetable, quote-unquote, vegetable rennet in our cheeses so that we have a vegetarian-approved cheese. There's also plant-based compounds that act as rennets. I've always wanted to try making cheese with cardoon mm-hmm. and thistle and nettles. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried it yet, but it's on my bucket list of things to do to try making cheese with those things. So, but those are natural ways that you can get milk to coagulate. Huh. But you can't make a hard cheese with it. It's only for soft cheeses.
Okay, so final round is, what is your favorite cheese? I'm sure that's like picking your favorite child, but anyone have either that or your signature cheese that you make?
Well, our signature cheese is probably our Haymaker cheddar. It's a farmstead cheddar cheese. It runs medium to mild in sharpness, and we make a batch of cloth-bound cheddar every year for the Common Ground Fair, so we've got some of that aging for this year.
Okay, quick. Sorry, we're running out of time.
Our signature cheese is the Whirlwind. It's a soft ripened cheese with a layer of ash similar to the Humboldt Fog, and it's made with a blend of sheep and goat's milk.
Mm.
And I've recently been really impressed with a triple cream brie that's being made at Springdale Farm in Waldo, because triple cream is a really hard cheese to make. And I know the cheesemaker's been working on this for a long time, and I really think she's got it. And it's a terrific cheese, and it's just now available.
Terrific. Well, thank you. So much more to talk about, but that's it for today. So Jesse Dowling is the owner of Fuzzy Udder Farm, Heather Donahue is co-owner of Balfour Farm, and Eric Rector is owner of Monroe Cheese Studio. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. Maine Public interns Lucia Helder and Celie Daigle answered your calls. You can find links to all of our past programs on mainecalling.org. Tomorrow on the program, tourism in Iceland. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.